Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we enjoy a little self-therapy for the heart. This is a brand new show. I'm your host, Valerie, and I am so thrilled and delighted to be here with you. I have to tell you, shout out to BBS Radio. Extraordinary folks. So very grateful for all of their hard work and their help. There is nobody better in this business than BBS Radio, and I am a living testament of that, and I am so grateful. We are going to let our hair down a little bit every Sunday afternoon. And so we're going to call our inner child out to play like we used to do. And I like to think of it as serving up slices of remembrance of who we really are. Take a little bit of time to do that. And I want us to remember, and I often have to remind myself, that this comes in each and every moment, doesn't it? It comes in each choice that we make. It comes in every breath that we have, this remembrance of who we are. And it's sort of akin to the mind observing the control mechanisms around us, isn't it? It's how well we are able to allow the flow of who we are, if you want to think about it. So we'll unpack a lot of that today and then in the Sunday afternoons that we're together. But I have to tell you what a beautiful moment it is to be here with you. The truth is, though, friends, I think we have always been together, haven't we? We know each other. There are probably no strangers here, everyone. And that's a beautiful thing. We can come as we are. We can be perfected as we are in this time together, and we can know that we know who we are. We understand that spending this time together is about remembrance, and that's a beautiful thing. Just to share a little short bio of who I am a career educator all the way through my lifetime. I started as a special educator. I worked with students who had learning disability and emotional disorders. And so that's the beginning of my adult experience as an educator. I moved through many, many different kinds of training, did a little bit of trauma, crisis management, did a little bit of brief therapy training. And those things are super, super important in the ego mind, right? So the ego holds on to all of that training and says, wow, look what I've done and look what I've accomplished. But when we step back and think about it, we realize that perhaps those things are memorials to wanting to be better and getting to a destination somehow and learning something that somehow intrinsically we don't already know. And so giving my bio was something of a reluctance for me, because I realized that really what I know is what each of us feels inside as we're tethered to the source and tethered to each other. So nevertheless, a little bit of bio. I will share with you how I was inspired to actually start a radio show. It's something of a trauma. It's a little funny, but I did learn a lot, and I'm learning more and more every day on this journey back to the divine inner child that I'm on. And hopefully we can share that together. But I had decided that I was very, very interested in what's called therapeutic gameplay. And that comes out of play self-therapy, which I am a big proponent of. I love the idea of everyone just stopping whatever they're doing in a day and just laying. And that means especially adults, right? Adults especially. And so this idea of adult gameplay was born in my mind. And then immediately you can imagine the problems sort of surrounding the idea of adult gameplay. So there was a lot of manicuring that I had to do with that idea. Just the idea of getting it into community centers. How do you share something like that? So what I decided to do was I will just release short audio clips online so that folks have a better understanding of what therapeutic gameplay is. So I'll just do a little bit of self-reflection and very short audio clips online. And so I started recording these very short clips of activities, play self-therapy activities. And the very first one that I did, I was so very excited. I finished recording. It's very short. And I opened it up to play it back and I listened to it and I was absolutely horrified. I sounded like I was dying. And hopefully I don't ever sound like that here on the show, because what that means to me is that I am so afflicted with a sense of controlling my beingness that I cannot enjoy the moment of just allowing my beingness to do what it loves to do. And I was listening to me trying to control my joy for playing, and I was miserable. And I turned it off and I thought, you know, I'm probably doomed with this passion that I have for therapeutic gameplay and to get adults excited about something that I have very clearly forgotten how to do. And in that moment, I realized, you know what? I think I have forgotten how to play. And it made me very, very afraid for myself. And I sat for quite a while and I just thought, how did this happen? That I went from a child who absolutely had the most extraordinary play. My life was so very adventurous and so full of just animated present moment experiences. And now I'm sitting here trying to show, you know, larger audiences the value of gameplay and how helpful it is to bringing us back to the inner child and our divinity. And I can't even find it myself. So it was just actually a moment of terror. And that's how this show was born. Me working through that forgetting of my essential self. And it's been a powerful journey, and I have a ways to go, folks. And I am so hopeful that you will join me on this journey a little bit at a time as we begin to be inspired once again by our essential selves. And the self-monitoring of the ego sort of loses its way as we move back into the essence of who we are. We find our divine inner child. And that's my hope and my beautiful goal for our journey. And I hope you share it. What a beautiful opportunity it is for me to sit with you and those ideas. And I'm so very grateful. So we think about the inner child as a metaphor, right? It's quite metaphorical and it works as a metaphor. We all know what the inner child metaphor is, right? There's something within us that remembers some kind of levity and some kind of being in the moment, right? We think that we find the moment of just having joy, and somehow that joy is encapsulated in this metaphor that we call the inner child. And then we think about, well, okay, what does that mean if it's not just a metaphor, but if it's actually part of the physicality that we are experiencing right now? Because we're not just words and we're not just symbols and we're not just metaphors. What else are we? I mean, we are in a body. And so we have to put those metaphors to work, don't we? as emanations of a source power, right? Emanations of a source power that energize what this body is and what it does and what our growth looks like. I mean, we're down here for a reason, right? And so the idea of physical growth and our remembrance of being present in the present moment of those source emanations that are really who we are as our essential selves, sort of encapsulated in a physical experience. It's a big job to do that. And it's okay if we want to encapsulate that experience as a metaphor or as something that is not necessarily a physical experience. But I do think it's intentional, right? We are here with intentionality. There is source or God or whatever it is we choose to, you know, refer to it as, wanting and intending to experience itself through us. And that's really the whole idea, isn't it? And if it's not, I can't wait for us to explore what else it could be and how those things will come together into essential truths. And that's very exciting for us to unpack as well. There are two memories that I have that I have referred back to when thinking about this sort of terror of my experience of forgetting how to play. Two childhood memories that really take on the expression of what my childhood was and how I was able to pull those remembrances back into my current experience. And the first memory, it's like I'm there right now, right? I'm there right now. I am in the moment. My adrenaline is pumping. I remember who was there, what was going on. I remember the experience. I see it. I feel it. It's very clear. I'm in the now with this particular memory. And it's a whole bunch of us, and we are on big wheels. And I hope that you know what a big wheel is, because if you don't, I sort of want to feel sorry for you, because I'm talking about our inner child. But man, when we talk about the inner child enjoying something, there's nothing better than a big wheel. Now, that's a fact. But it's a memory about our big wheels. We are at the top of a very steep hill, okay? And we are lined up, and we are anywhere from 5 years old to maybe 8 or 9 years old, maybe 10. And we are lined up with these big wheels, and we have decided we're going to take the hill. Each and every one of us, one at a time, we are going to take the hill. And so kids start rolling down this big hill. It takes everything that they have to keep their hands on this big wheel and get to the bottom without rolling, just tipping over. And finally, one of my very best friends in the whole world gets on the big wheel. Now, normally this is not meaningful because we're all doing it, but she has a disability and she has one hand that does not grip onto things. And she decided that day that she was going to take the hill on her big wheel with one hand. And it stirred our excitement. And of course, we were all somewhere on the line of being very afraid for her and really wanting her to do this. And she was determined. And in all things, she's very much that way today, very determined. She got on the big wheel and she started down this very huge hill, and top speed, rolling down to the very bottom of the hill. She was still intact until she hit the very bottom, and she did something extraordinary. She put her hands up in the air, and just as she hit the bottom of the hill and she put her hands up in the air, she rolled that thing over. Just rolled it over multiple times. And of course, we are all standing there and we are mortified. And we start running down to the bottom of the hill, and we are terrified. She has just rolled and rolled and rolled and laying there on the ground. We get to her at the bottom of the hill. She sits up. We're helping her up. We're dusting her off. She's got bloody elbows, bloody knees. And I'm thinking, oh no, what have we done to our very best friend by encouraging her to go down this hill? And finally, she looks up and she does this extraordinary thing. She looks up and she puts her fist in the air. And everybody immediately starts to just clamor and scream and laugh and pat her on the back. And it was this wonderful moment of just being present together in this experience that was truly energetic. And that was just an extraordinary memory for me. The power and the energy of that memory just stays with me. And so that's one thing that does frame my memory when I talk about the inner child, is that day where we were undefeatable and she just created this moment of complete oneness with her experience. And it was not judgment. It was not survival. It was being purely present in that moment and working through it, where she dominated all of the fear around her, and just it was a beautiful thing. My second memory is very, very different, and I would couch it to say that perhaps my second memory was a feeling I carry of the end of my childhood. And I'm wondering, as I talk about these two memories together, what your memories are of play and of your childhood, and if there is a strongest memory for you that sort of encapsulates your inner child and perhaps the metaphor that we carry around. I would love to hear those ideas, and I'm hoping that you're thinking about what those memories might be as I'm describing mine. The second memory is about my sister and I sitting on the porch with my grandfather, and he's a very tall, quiet Scotsman. He's very, very quiet, very loving. We're sitting on the porch. We perhaps had just come from the farm, and we were sitting there enjoying the afternoon. And all of a sudden, a big orange school bus drives up. And a lovely young woman gets out of the school bus, comes through the yard, opens the gate, walks across the yard, and greets us at the porch. Now, automatically, my sister and I are looking at her like, this is strange. What's happening? And she says to my grandfather, good morning. I am here with the school to enroll your children or your grandchildren in school next year. And we were about 4 years old, maybe 4.5 years old. And we looked at each other, and confusion just sort of hit our faces. We looked at our grandfather. Of course, he didn't have much of an expression. He just sat there listening. And she turned to us all of a sudden and asked us, would you like to start kindergarten next year? You will get to come to school every morning. You'll have your own desk. You will sit at your desk and learn how to read and write. And a lot of fun things will go on as you learn good skills for, you know, in school. And my sister and I looked at each other, and I could tell what was going through her head, and I know what was going through mine. And what was going through my head was, are you crazy? There is a crazy woman. She's come through our yard. She's asking us the silliest question. Do I want to stop my life and go to a building that I have to sit at a desk all day and learn stuff like reading and writing? Why on earth would I possibly want to do that? And I remember it just like it was yesterday, just like it was right now. I remember it. And I looked at her, and with all seriousness, I looked at her and I said, no, we don't want to do that. And she stepped back and she said, well, you don't want to go. And my sister said, no, we don't want to do that. And so, of course, my grandfather thanked her, and she was, gave him some paperwork, and she said her good afternoons and left the yard, got back on the school bus and drove away. We were very, worried about what the paperwork meant, but then very quickly our attention was taken with something else there. But that memory is very, very alive in my thinking when I think about my inner child, and the idea that someone was deliberate in their good work of ending what I thought was a wonderful childhood experience. And so it's very memorable for me, these two memories, the highs and lows, the very best of this experience of the child. And then, of course, this fear of losing that experience that even children have. I mean, the idea that perhaps my time as a child was over was very close to my heart. I knew for sure something was up. I didn't know what. And sure enough, of course, we went to kindergarten the next year. And of course, it was, all of my fears came true. The desk and the writing and all the work. And it just got worse from there, And then I grew up and I became a lifelong learner, and I never stopped going to school, which is an interesting thing, isn't it? But these two memories, of course, kind of couch my experience. I'm hoping that you have memories that sort of take you in those directions of your child metaphor, your inner child, and what was it at its very best? And did you get a sense of losing sort of that child metaphor, and what did it feel like? I am hopeful that there are some of you out there that perhaps you have not lost that inner child metaphor. And my joy is one day when we actually go into audience participation, which I cannot wait for. I cannot wait till this becomes your show. I cannot wait to be guided by you and your comments. And I can't wait to hear that there are those of you out there who actually still hold that inner child. What a beautiful, beautiful conversation. I can't wait to be instructed by that. So, when I say that I remember these things like they were today, these memories, what we might want to remember is that they probably are, right? We say, I remember that just like it was happening today. It's very vivid. Well, if we live in an environment that we want to call quantum, and we want to say that everything is the experience of now, it's the eternal now, really. Which can be very confusing. It's a very dense idea. We'll unpack that as well as we work through our Sundays together. But we can keep in mind that we can choose to bring forward whatever kinds of memories we have and experience them as if they were in the now, because honestly, they are, right? And the idea is, what are we choosing to continue to spiral, right, into our present moment, and how does that serve us? And so I suppose some of us say, well, when you think about having a history and you think about having memories, and we are inundated by memories, it's truly easy to do because it is still part of our current expression of self. But how does that serve us? And when we say perhaps we can think of it in terms of letting those things that are not serving us go and just considering that perhaps they don't exist anymore is one way to do it. So that's a very interesting idea of what pops up and how does that serve our particular experience right now, knowing that everything is sort of spiraled into an eternal moment. It is something that we will unpack. So how is that feeling then different from your day to day? So when I think about childhood and my childhood memory, I'm curious if you were able to recollect something that was very memorable for you. And if we step back and think about, okay, this memory that I have, how is it different from my experience of today? Like literally this moment of today. And that's something that might be worth considering, is how does that experience align? Where are we as adults in our life experience? And how does that compare with their inner child? It's something we'll talk a lot about. And then we think about the idea, well, you know, folks have to grow up, right? We move through this physicality from a physical childhood into adulthood. We know that our bodies change, etc. It's all a part of this process. But we have to ask ourselves, right? What does that really mean to say that we have to grow up? You know, how intentional do we want to be with that idea, right? What parts of us have to grow up? There are parts of us that, you know, do grow up. Well, what parts have to grow up? What parts have to move into what I think of as the control system, right? The control mechanisms of our human experience. What parts of us move into that adult control system that we're in? And the mechanics of the control that we experience. For example, we grow up, we become adults, we make homes for our family. We build our families. We want a home for our family. Well, what does that include, right? Does that include a mortgage? Does it include a government control system? Does it include bills that we have to pay, right? So it's something to think about as we look at this divine inner child and its expression within us as adults in this human physical experience, and what that means for our journey and what we choose to hold on to and what we choose to allow to emanate through us, even in this system of control mechanics that we experience in the human realm. And you think about, well, what does our journey look like when we think about a journey into sovereignty, right? A journey into alignment with our essential selves. And that's all tricky stuff. It's stuff we'll think about every Sunday together. And the idea that we go back to the childhood experiences, and how does that serve us, right? What is a starting point for us? What's a starting point for this conversation? And that's important for us to think about. I mean, how do we take this information and make it conceptually easy to follow and easy to understand and applicable for really a spiritual conversation? And that's not easy sometimes. And sometimes that's the difficulty for us, right? As we are wanting to return to our essential self, and perhaps we, you know, use the divine child metaphor to do that. And then we say, well, we are in adult bodies now, and we live in a control system now, and we are not the same now. And somehow we feel different than we did. How do we get back, and how do we stay with our responsibilities, and how do we balance? And it can be overwhelming. So perhaps a good starting point is to ask ourselves, you know, what do children do when they play? What do children do? Is that a fair place for us to start on this journey together? And I think perhaps that might be a good place for us to start with their building blocks. And we think about childhood, and we think about the ideas that create for us this conceptual divine inner child. And words start coming to mind, like authenticity And the idea that a child, right, has very little pretense. I mean, what you see is what you get. A child is not working really hard to present a public self, right? There's really no pretense. Now we can learn some quicker than others to create a pretense around who we are and to kind of hide that authenticity because we're learning to adjust to certain social environments. And then of course we want to put our best foot forward, whatever that means. And then we create pretense for ourselves to be appropriate and to be acceptable, et cetera. But as children, really, we don't have any of that. We are who we are, and it's a beautiful thing, and we don't even think about it. We don't even think about the idea that, am I presenting myself in an appropriate way? Am I authentic? Because of course I am, because I'm not even thinking about what that means and whether I should be or not. I am in the moment. And my attention is focused on the moment. And I'll give you an example. It's sort of a universal one. And that's the ice cream after dinner idea, right? As children, when we want ice cream, we just want to go get ice cream, right? But we have to learn along the way somehow that, you know, you get ice cream after dinner. You got to eat this, 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 and this. And then, you know, if you do a good job, you can have some ice cream. Well, our little selves, right, living in the moment, and we are focused on our joy, our highest excitement, to borrow a beautiful phrase. We just want ice cream. That's what we want to do. That's our essential selves coming through. We really don't want to wait. Now, there's probably a great reason to wait. There's probably a great reason to delay gratification, right? And we're actually taught, there's a lot of psychology around delaying gratification, that children who can do it are able to control their environments better. They are more suited to a controlled environment. They work better under rules and regulations. Well, let's think about that for a minute. How groovy is that, right? That somehow delaying our gratification helps us to become better consumers of a controlled environment later on. So no judgment around ice cream. I am a parent too. I have said many a time, ice cream after dinner, that's for sure. And I look back and think, wow, how beautiful it could have been if maybe more times I had said, let's get that box of ice cream out right now. Anyway, no judgment, just an observation. So we're thinking about inspired action. Children do what they're inspired to do, right? It's intentional. There's a pure experience. It's not filtered. There really are no rules except the natural rules. If you climb up on a big, huge cliff, rocks on a big, huge bunch of rocks and you fall off onto the ground, well, you climbed up there, you lost your balance. And what happens after that is you fall and you get hurt. Like on the farm, we had huge rocks. They were horses to us. Huge rocks. We would ride them. And sometimes we would get really brave and we'd stand up on those horses. Sometimes we fell off and we learned the natural rule there, didn't we? Be careful, you're going to fall off. We were guided by our senses, by the intuition, by the natural environment that taught us exactly how to behave because the outcomes were very certain, right? Apart from that, we were very curious. We didn't necessarily have boundaries, and except, you know, those boundaries that helped us to understand this is dangerous or this will hurt us, et cetera, et cetera. Now that's, as an adult, can be very, very dangerous to live that way, right? No rules when we have a set of societal rules that are, again, in this environment of, you know, social control, the system that says that we have rules for everything nowadays. That can be, you know, a mixed bag if we decide as adults to allow our pure experience to be unfiltered and intuitive and work by natural rules. That sort of indicates that we could probably get rid of all kinds of control mechanisms somehow that are still around us that we have allowed to guide us. Our child, inner child, seems to realize that they're not really that necessary, right? but perhaps we decide governments are necessary and rules for public parking are necessary and, you know, zoning boards are necessary and, you know, that kind of thing are necessary as adults for some reason. Those things have meaning for some reason. I'm not so sure our inner child would be interested in any of that. And I think it's a dynamic conversation, and I can't wait for us to unpack all of those ideas together as we work together here on Sundays to consider our inner child and bringing ourselves into the present moment that doesn't force all of the external rules on us. And that's a beautiful thing. It's an empowering place to be, to begin, isn't it? To begin our exchange with our environment, maybe in new ways. How do I want to experience my environment now that I am returning to this divine inner child that prefers not to be filtered and prefers intuition and prefers not to have these artificial boundaries that perhaps are not as helpful as, you know, the control mechanisms at play would have us to believe? And so we look at things like authenticity, right? We look at things that cause us to work from a shadow self where identity becomes how we're able to fit into the environments that control us or the environments that we have to work in, right, as adults. And so where does our essential self belong in all of that? And it's not easy conversation, but it certainly is interesting conversation and truly worthy conversation for us to have. And so my theory is that if we were all completely, authentically our true essential selves, that we would absolutely supernova into our ascension immediately, just immediately, all of us, boom. I think our journey here would transition so quickly. And I think perhaps that is the idea, that we are all moving together in different ways, different timing, toward this essential expression of ourselves once again. And many of us are choosing to take this body along for the ride. Some of us won't make those choices, and everything in between, and all of it is okay. All of it is beautiful. It's a beautiful journey no matter what. And so the idea is, what do we do with authenticity? What even is authenticity? And that is a beautiful question to ask. And I am hoping you will think about that with me for a little while. So very briefly, this idea of authenticity, it's a word we hear in the spiritual communities everywhere, and for good reason, because it's such a good describer of what we're trying to get back to, right? When we think about our essential selves, we think about the inner child. Authenticity is just a beautiful word. So how do we get to authenticity? What even is being authentic? Is it something that we have to become more of? Or is it something that we have to lose more of? Do we have to shed some things, get rid of some things? I mean, that's an interesting question. Do we have to build more things in to be authentic? Or are there just things we just need to let go of? So we'll keep that in the back of our mind. Authenticity is something that has been described through the ages. It is ancient. It is been around as long as language has been around. And just to quote a few examples of how ingrained the idea of authenticity is in a lot of our elevated thinking, I can just give you a couple of quotes of folks who have really used the idea in their expressions of literature and psychology and et cetera, et cetera. And Shakespeare says it, this above all, to thine own self be true. I think that's just a very complete, succinct idea of the authentic self, right? And we have Emerson, who says, to be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. And that's beautifully said when it comes to authenticity, of being who you are as your essential self, and allowing that beautiful experience to create moment by moment how it is that you navigate this physical expression that we are all navigating. And Jung himself, Carl Jung, says the privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are. And so when we think about these quotes and we think about the idea of authenticity, it's really a great springboard for conversation about where are we trying to get to? Why are we trying to be there? What does it mean for us? And how do we define these things that are, in our conversation, very conceptual? In other words, it's what the mind does, right? We're conceptual in our mind. Our language is conceptual. Our spirit doesn't need any of that, does it? But we are layers of beingness, and to discuss ideas conceptually can really help us, so that when we sit down and get real quiet, we are able to integrate and become more expansive, because we are allowing that transition from mind that is calm, sort of in its focus, right? Conceptually calm in its focus. It's not in chaos. It feels like it has a bead on things, on ideas. We can allow that to just rest a while and move our experience into our heart spaces and into that space of just beingness. And so talking about it can be a good avenue for allowing ourselves to shift gears, so to speak, from the mind and into, the essential self, the spiritual self, if you want to use that term. And so the idea is to be visible to yourself, to be so present that you are 100% of what you truly are. I mean, that's authenticity, isn't it? You are so present in yourself that there's nothing else that takes up your effort or your attention or your expression, right? It's all you integrated there in your beingness, in your behavior, your actions. All of that is integrated. It's expanded out of the conceptual, out of the physical, and into, I suppose you could call, the spiritual, or the energetic is what I prefer, but it has lots of names. So before we finish today, I want to get to a really super fun activity, because that's what we're here for. We're here for some play self-therapy. We're here for some self-reflection and some fun, right? And so I want us to play. Let's play. And what you'll need is, if you are so inclined, unless, of course, you're driving, then forget about it. But if you're inclined, grab a pen, grab a piece of paper, anything to write with, anything to write on. Okay, we're going to do a very short activity, super fun activity. It's where I provide the play, okay, and you provide the self-reflection. I am not ever interested in giving you any answers. I do not want to be a therapist. I just want to be a friend along for the ride on Sunday afternoons. That's the fun part. And so your role, if you choose to accept it, is just to sit down for a second and allow some self-reflection, have a little fun, and see, what happens with that. So grab a pen and a piece of paper. And what you're going to do is you're going to number your paper 1 through 5. Okay, you're just going to number your paper 1 through 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. And what you're going to do, and perhaps it might be the best experience is to just allow your thinking to flow. But what you're going to do is I'm going to ask you to list five of the most extraordinary people you know. Okay? The most extraordinary people you know, list their names. It can be anybody. Okay? It could be a real person. It could be fictional. It could be someone who's alive, someone who's passed on. It could be somebody you know. It could be somebody that you just know of or know about from a distance. Five most extraordinary people you know. Take a minute, jot those names down. What comes to mind? We only want to do five, right? Unless you really need to do six, get that sixth one in there by all means. It's okay. And we're going to take a look at these names. Okay. So take a second, grab a pen and a piece of paper, number your paper 1 to 5, five of the most extraordinary people you know. Okay. Just make a quick list. Jot down their first name, last name, whatever comes to mind. Okay. You got it? Five of your most of the most extraordinary people you know, and jot them down 1 to 5. Okay. You got it? I don't want to leave anybody behind. I don't want to leave anybody behind. Does everybody have it? Okay. You're five extraordinary people. And maybe some of you thought outside the box. That's super fun too. Okay, so here's my question to you, and here's where the self-reflection comes in. And I'm not ever going to ask for your answers. This is up to you. This is in the space of your quiet, still moment of reflection. And here's the question I have about your list of the five most extraordinary people you know. Okay, my question to you is, all right, where are you on your list? Where are you? Are you number one? Did you make it to the number one spot up there? Are you number five? Maybe you barely made it in there. Oh, by the way, yes, I'm extraordinary. Let me get my name down there. Did you do that? Are you somewhere in the middle? Somewhere in the middle, you put your name down there. Let me hazard a guess. Is it possible that some of us are not on our list? Is that possible? Were you on your list? Were you on your list? Now, I hear it. Okay, I hear it right now. Some of us are going to say, wait a second, I did not know that I could be on the list. Well, it's the same question, isn't it? Why not? Why would you think that perhaps automatically you would be excluded from a list of extraordinary people, right? Isn't it the same question? So think about that. No judgment. No judgment. We don't need any judgment here. We are observing, right? We are allowing, okay, this moment to unfold. A little self-reflection is a beautiful thing. And I want us to think about if we didn't make it onto our list of extraordinary people, what that might mean for us. And for those of you who did make it on the list, okay, all right, okay, enough said, you know, all right, okay, good job, well done. But we're not judging. We're not going to judge. We're just going to have some fun and just take a look at the idea of perhaps we maybe didn't choose ourselves. And that takes us back into childhood. At least it does my childhood. And I know every chance I had, I would say, pick me, pick me. You know, everybody would line up. Okay, you'd line up and then you had team captains and they're trying to pick people that are going to win the game and everybody's shouting, pick me, pick me, pick me. Your hands are up real high and you're just jerking around everywhere and yelling and saying, hey, 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 pick me. And now, maybe in our adult experience, we don't even pick ourselves, right? We don't pick ourselves. Maybe we wait for somebody else to do that. Maybe we aren't thinking about ourselves. It's possible that you did not even cross your mind. Maybe you don't think enough about yourself. Maybe you feel guilty focusing on you. A lot of us do, you know, we have a lot of responsibilities. Adulthood is a lot of things. Perhaps easy is not one of them. And maybe we forget ourselves. Maybe we're taught to forget ourselves, put ourselves last, right? That's a whole other conversation I'm sure we'll get into one day. And the question is, are we frustrated with our life? Are we trying really hard to find ourselves in our work, in our day, and we can't? We can't find ourselves. We can't find the joy in our life. Maybe we're lonely, right? And maybe that has something to do with that we just don't feel chosen, right? We live in sort of this fallacy of separation in a human body. It's a very real thing. It is a real barrier for us in human bodies, this idea that we are separated. You know, it's true that we are our own frequencies. We are our own beingness. But separation is something that we feel really, really heavy in the human body. That is something of a myth. It's a fallacy for us in the spiritual realm, right? So the question is, do we actually even realize that we are co-creators with source energies at any given moment? There is creation going on. There is the flow, the river of source. Okay, the flow of source. You are a current in that flow, right? And the question is, do we realize that there's creation going on around us all over the place? And are we reaching out to engage that co-creative energy? Do we realize that we're never really actually creating alone? That we're already chosen, actually? Do we recognize that we are already chosen? And the question is, are we choosing ourselves? And is that a starting point? I mean, we want to be our essential selves. We want to be authentic. We want to be in our present moment full of joy, right? That we're creating in our lives. Can we do any of that if we haven't, first of all, chosen ourselves and said, I am enough, right? I am part of this beautiful story that is creation. I'm part of the flow, the energy. I'm emanation of this extraordinary adventure that is the source energy of creation, building universes of universes. I did that. You did that. You're doing it now. You're doing it now. Do we see that in our lives? Is it because perhaps we're not choosing ourselves? And then, of course, other things choose us for other things, right? We get kind of, you know, moved off course, so to speak, in the current if we're not present with the idea that we choose ourselves. And so the idea is, how much does the universe have to work with if we're not choosing ourselves? Okay. And it's not a judgment. Please, please don't feel like I'm judging. This is, believe it or not, this activity is my very first activity. You remember when I told you that I recorded an activity? And when I listened back, I was terrified because it sounded like I was dying and I was miserable. This is my first activity. And I was miserable through this. I was miserable and I learned a lot. And we're here together just to be together, to journey together, to walk together through ideas, through concepts that are understood in the mind, but that we really feel deeply as spirits, right? That's all we're here to do. Have a little fun. Don't beat yourself up. It's just super fun. We'll do more super fun things, and hopefully you will keep a light heart about things. And there are touch points that let us think more deeply about this journey that we're on. That's my hope. And so I want to do one more activity with you. We are nearing the end of our time together. But this activity is what we call a Dixit card, D-I-X-I-T. It's a Dixit card. A Dixit card, there are, you know, stacks of cards that groups use to generate conversation. And what flows from the conversation can become, like I said, touch points of ideas that you might want to explore further. So what I'd like you to do, if you're inclined, is just imagine a scene in your mind where you are playing an instrument, okay? We're just going to imagine a scene where we're playing an instrument. And here's the thing. The instrument is your body. The instrument you choose is your body. Just let your mind do that and see what it does. Let your mind do that, okay? You're playing an instrument. The instrument is your body. Okay, now think about this. Let's think about this together. What instrument are you playing? Right? What instrument are you playing? What music are you playing? Did you hear any? Can you hear some now? What instrument, what music are you playing on this instrument? That is you. And what feelings are arising when you think about the scene that you've created in your mind, in that scene? Okay. And so this is sort of the beginning of a conversation about how to move a subconscious experience into the light of a conscious awareness and talk about it. That's all. And so think about this activity. Work with maybe the scene that you've created and realize that it maybe is a jumping off point to consider how it is that we're using our body. What does it feel like? What does it sound like? What feelings arise in this body and the experience we're having right now? We'll talk more about these thoughts and this particular Dixit card next Sunday. But for now, our time is up, good friends, and we are at the time end of our time together. And I want to thank you so much for joining me. It was so wonderful to be here with you. My hope is that there was something there that is helpful, something that we shared together that is meaningful and that you can grab onto, as I do. Until next Sunday, and then I will be back again. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining me. Same time on BBS. Thank you so, so much, BBS, for having me. And if it helps, get yourself a notepad. We will do many more of these self-reflection activities. Remember, there's no room for judgment. We're having fun. We're allowing ourselves to experience these activities in ways that bring the greatest kind of response to our consciousness. Okay. So as always, be kind to yourself in all things, everyone. Be gentle with your heart space. It is a beautiful, beautiful place to be. Give it the love that it needs. And so now it's time for me to go home, friends. Until next time, it was beautiful to be with you.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.